This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're locked into VSiN, the sports betting network. Appreciate you hanging out with us, however you may be tuning in. Sirius XM channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We'll do more on NFL MVP later on in the program as, based on recent run, who we should be targeting that makes sense based on the numbers. Also, Ryan Day sounds like he's scared already before the season starts. I actually don't understand the AP poll and the betting odds having the Buckeyes as the favorite to win the national champion. More on that later on in the show. And we're going to stay in college football as the countdown to week zero is here, baby. Thursday, August 27th, we will get things started. We will have the FCS opening game, Mercyhurst and Youngstown State, and football season will officially be here to help us break down the season. He does an awesome job, man. It's Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews. Check him out at Pick Six Previews on X. You guys know at this point, I do this show. I do Live Bet Saturday. I don't have enough time for prep. Pick Six Previews makes my prep so much easier on Saturdays. He lists everything. The offense versus the defense versus the offense, information, everything you're looking for. So it's all consolidated in one place. Check it out, Pick Six Previews. And Brett joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Buddy, we're here. We made it. Your hard work is done. I received it in the mail. I've had it on the PDF file for a while. It's tremendous as always. You can exhale now. We finally made it to football season.
Yeah, finally, Dustin. Thanks for having me on. I mean, appreciate it. It's been a long off season. It's really just been magazine season for me, producing the 2026 Preview Magazine. Hard copies are rolling off the printing press still. We're shipping them across the country. But yeah, all that research, all the hard work goes into it. Now we can finally talk some games, some matchups. The best time of year is upon us. I'm really excited.
Awesome stuff. And I want to begin. Let's begin at the top because you had a great write-up on Oregon. I am very high on Oregon. That is my national champion this year because I just think Dan Lanning's building, getting knocked down. And I think they have a team returning that is kind of the best of all worlds. Guys back, transfers in, guys off injuries that could really explode. And you have them winning the title. You picked it actually a year ago. Why are we going to be right about the Oregon Ducks hoisting the trophy at 7.5-1?
Yeah, that's right. To the Pick Six Previews readers, back in the 2025 edition last year, I called for Oregon, not in 25, but I said, hey, look at 2026, a full year from now, because this team, the way that they've acquired talent, it's back-to-back-to-back, three straight top five high school classes, back-to-back transfer top five classes, and they kept them all from going pro. So I was looking at this. It was a young team in 25. I projected them to win it all in 26. And here we are 12 months later. I'm sticking with it. Top five offense, top five defense per my numbers. You get Dante Moore to turn down a likely first round draft pick spot in the pros. He's back. You're right about the injury deal too, because the receivers are healthy with Evan Stewart back, DeCorian Moore back, big offensive line like they always have. And really the defense, this is where it goes to the next level for me. There's so many five stars on that defensive line and that secondary. So I see a complete team. You know, this would be the fourth straight Big Ten national champion, fourth different Big Ten champion. I know the listeners down south won't like to hear that one, but I think Oregon's the pick. I've been calling it the year of the duck, and here we are. It's time for them to cash in.
That's quacktastic, my friend. I hope we're right. I hope Oregon gets us to the window because – I love Lanning. I love Dante Moore. And I think this all could come together for them. Now, a team that was in the playoff a year ago is Oklahoma. Yet their odds to win the title are still 30-1. And I'm pretty bullish on them like you. I think John Mateer down the stretch, that was injury related. I think he's more like the guy we saw through the first few weeks of the season. O-line's back for most part. They have some new weapons to mix in here. But Brent Venables always has a great defense. Oklahoma, what are you doing with them on the season?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Oklahoma. It's a team I'm very high on. I've got them all the way in the SEC title game to play Georgia. I've got them sixth in the country. When I started looking at the win totals, I saw 7.5 really stood out to me with Oklahoma. I think it's a 10-win team. And it all starts on defense. You know what you're signing up for. You know what you're getting with the Brent Venables defense. It's been a couple top five units in a row. Last year's was off the charts. They actually broke my record for negative play rate, which shows how frequently a team is in the backfield making sacks, tackles for loss, super aggressive. And they're all back, a lot of them. I think seven starters back. A lot of these guys are all SEC caliber. So I know that side of the ball what I'm getting. It's this offense where I think we're going to see a major gain this year. Second year for John Mateer in the SEC. Second year with their coordinator, Ben Arbuckle. And you're right about that offensive line. Last year, they were all freshmen, redshirt freshmen. Look for a full year of development with Coach Bill Biedenboe, one of the best O-line coaches in the country. So I see, your championship caliber defense paired with a massive gain on offense. So I see a complete team. I think they're going to return to the playoff bracket, go way over that 7.5. I think it's up to minus 150 right now, but I like them to go over 7.5, probably get to 10 wins. So I agree with you on that one. I'm really high on Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think Mateer is one of those longer shots, around 25-ish to 1 for Heisman, that I'm just going to have on principle, because I just love the kid, and I think he's going to have a lot of big moments this season. Brett Cianci is our guest. Pick Six Previews, at Pick Six Previews on X. Check out the Preview Magazine. But also, like, I fully endorse the Pick Six Plus. I mean, it really helps me with my prep for live bets Saturday, specifically here. Now, Louisville. There is certainly a propaganda among our own Tim Murray and yourself about the Cardinals and Jeff Brohm this year. And I got to tell you, I'm picking up what you guys are putting out there. Like, it's certainly interesting. Lincoln Kienholz at quarterback, the element he brings on the ground. And Brohm has proven that he doesn't need much time to get the transfer portal players acclimated. Win total, 7.5 minus 190, 8.5. You can get plus 124 on that over. Is there a world where this Louisville team wins the ACC?
Well, they've got a shot. They're my pick to play against Miami in that title game. And remember, when these two teams played last year, Louisville picked off Carson Beck 5 times. 4 of them counted, but they were picking him off all game. And Louisville actually beat Miami last year. But as it stands, I've got Miami winning the conference. I have Louisville 2nd in the ACC. What you like about them, it's a balanced team. They got the offense and the defense. On defense, it's a pass rush that's 2nd best in the conference right behind Miami. They got all that back. And then on offense, they really put some key parts around their new quarterback. They got starters at receiver off of Florida State, off of Vanderbilt. Isaac Brown and Kewan Brown are both back at running back. And a lot of all-conference guys on the offensive line. I know they're from the 9AQ level, but this translates pretty well in the ACC. So I like all of that. All the pieces are around. It all comes down to Lincoln Kienholz, the new quarterback coming from Ohio State. And if you notice, it's a different playing style than you're used to seeing at Louisville. You know, Coach Brohm really likes those pocket passers. This guy's a runner. He's a dynamic dual threat guy. And I asked Coach Brohm about this on my call with him. I said, hey, a different skill set. How's that offense going to look? And he kind of chuckled and he said, hey, he's got some surprises up his sleeve with this new scheme. So I think it's going to be a lights out offense again, maybe a new look for them, but it's going to be solid. And then lastly, with schedule, because this is a big part of it now with the schedule draws that you get in these conferences. Louisville draws the easiest ACC schedule out there. They only play one of my top 6 in the league. It's SMU, and that game is at Louisville. It's at home. So I really like Louisville to go over 8.5, get to Charlotte to play Miami and see what happens from there. But very bullish on Louisville this year.
Yeah, schedule shakes out nicely for them. And the schedule seems to be the main selling point for people talking about Penn State this season, Brett. And I kind of referenced the Detroit Lions here. If the best thing you can say is that the schedule is easy and you don't really love the players or the team, I'm concerned. Penn State's win total, 9.5. It's essentially Iowa State and a few other players coming with Matt Campbell over there. What do you make of what's going to go down year one of Campbell in Happy Valley?
Yeah, Dustin, I'm based here in Pennsylvania, so I hear about it every day about, hey, look at that schedule. But at a certain point, I push back and say, look at the roster. You need to first look room by room, position by position group, coordinators, schemes, all of that first, and then you look at the schedule to see if there's going to be any shakeup. But they're going in the wrong direction on this analysis. I think if you look at this team, it's a fringe top 25 caliber team. There are some proven parts coming with Coach Campbell from Iowa State. He's bringing, I think, 14 starters from Iowa State. Probably 10 of them are going to start for Penn State. That's half your starting lineup. There's some proven pieces. Rocco Beck, the quarterback, is really a gamer, a fourth quarter type quarterback, leads a lot of late game drives. He's been awesome. But outside of that, I mean, you look at the defense. They had 6 all Big Ten players last year on defense. All 6 are gone. Their star running backs from last year both went pro. And there's a lot of new faces here. And the last bit on this is defensive coordinator-wise. When you look back at Iowa State, what Matt Campbell did so well was with Coach Haycock, his innovative defensive coordinator. He retired. So now you have just a normal 4-3 base now. I think that there's some there's going to be some edges that they're going to lose here. So I think you got to look at the roster first, room by room. It doesn't look like a 10-win team to me. So I don't care about the schedule. I'm going under 9.5 for Penn State.
I love it. It's Pick 6 Previews. Check out the preview mag. If you get that, you combine it with the VSiN College Football Betting Guide with the betting breakdowns. You don't need anything else to get ready for the college football season. Follow Brett on X at Pick 6 Previews. Hey, buddy, thanks for the time tonight. Look forward to chatting throughout the season. Your hard work is paying off because the guide is tremendous as always. And look forward to our Oregon Ducks winning the championship this year.
There you go, Dustin. Let's do it. Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Anytime. And appreciate the praise.
Awesome. Great stuff. Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews. That is where you can check out all of his information. Hey, football season's almost here, and the sharp money's already moving. Here's how the sharp plays sees it first. Exclusive data feeds from four major sports books, thousands of sharp bettors, pro syndicates, tracked in real time before the market moves. All of it's filtered, sorted by their version 6.0 of their AI model. That's the machine. Now the receipts, every play logged, every result public, records back to 2011, live log since 2021. It all feeds a live performance terminal. Check it out anytime. No login, no paywall. No one in the industry runs one because most records couldn't survive it. The sharp plays. Their record gets audited daily by their own haters. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. Follow the sharp money at sharpplays.com today. It's cashing out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Bottom of the hour, we talk baseball with Jeff Erickson. PCA's gone 30-30. We got to pick him for NL MVP. More on that later on in the program. Ryan Day sounds scared in the campus crawl, but when we return, too high, all right, all right, all right. I've become a believer. More on the Broncos next on Cashing Out.
Cashing out. You're on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You know, baseball is a weird sport, man, because you can be a guy who's doing everything right, pulling all the right strings all season long, and then you do one bonehead thing, and you got me questioning if you really know what you're doing. Welcome back into the show. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're locked into VSiN, the sports betting network. But earlier in the night, we had the Chicago Cubs walk off the White Sox 7-5. And the reason I bring that up is Will Venable is your favorite for American League or manager of the year, I should say, American League manager of the year, minus 160. Chad Tracy's the second shot at 3-1. Kevin Cash, Tampa Bay, plus 460. And in case you missed it in the game, we had extra innings. And in the top of the 10th inning, Craig Counsell opted to walk Murakami to set up a force. And ultimately, the Cubs get out of that situation. We go to the bottom of the inning, and there's the runner on second to begin, and Pete Crow Armstrong's the first batter. And for some reason, with Hagen Smith pitching, Will Venable, your favorite for AL Manager of the Year, opts to pitch to PCA, your potential MVP, and he hits a home run, his second of the day. It's his 30th of the year, so he's 30-30 on the season now, has a chance to go 40-40 this year. But the more I think about it, the more I don't understand. What was Will Venable thinking there? Why wouldn't you attack the rest of the lineup? Why would you go after a guy who's the best hitter on the team there when you can set up a force and all of a sudden a ground ball could get you two outs and get you out of this situation, go to another extra inning? The more I think about how that went down, the more I don't understand it. And maybe it's worth considering Chad Tracy for American League Manager of the Year at 3-1, because I think his narrative is pretty well built and that number feels good. You can't do it off of one game, obviously. Will Venable has been at the forefront of this turnaround, but at the same time, it's like, has he done more than Chad Tracy's done since he took over with the Red Sox? They've certainly had some issues lately, but I don't know if that number's correct. I feel like it should probably be like Venable's minus 120, 110, Tracy closer to 2-1 range, but either way, that's just what I'm thinking now. Just realizing in the moment, why would you pitch to PCA? That just can't happen there. And essentially, Will Venables managed his way out of a win opportunity at Wrigley Field on Monday night. With that, we'll put the baseball to the side for a little bit here. We'll do more with it on with Jeff Erickson coming up in 13 minutes on the program. But want to play a little too high, all right, all right, all right. And if you rewind the tape a year ago, I was not buying what everyone was cooking with the Denver Broncos here. And now a year later, I think I'm a believer. I think I believe in Bo Nix. Mostly how that team looked and functioned offensively once he got injured at the end of the season. But the defense is mostly back. You still have to figure out what happens with Jonathan Cooper. I'm sure a suspension's coming with a DV issue off the field from the offseason. But the win total is 9.5 on the Broncos. That feels completely disrespectful. I'm sorry. I really don't understand this number at all. This is a team that has so much returning this year. The schedule's manageable. It's not easy. It's not hard. 18th toughest. They won 14 games a year ago. They swept Kansas City. I understand Patrick Mahomes was hurt last year. But I think Denver is just as deep and as big of a threat. They beat the Bengals, the Eagles, the Cowboys. They beat Houston. They split with the Chargers. I don't think that was a fluke. Do I think they win 14 games again? Probably not. But 10 games feels like the norm right now. Their defense only allowed 18.3 points per game. That was third in the league. Offense was 14th at 23.6 points per game. More importantly, Bo Nix was a maestro in this offense where they just kind of manage things through three quarters. Then fourth quarter, if it's a one-score game, Bo Nix stepping up and making plays with his arms, with his legs, and now he has more weapons with Jalen Waddle there. He has another running back in Jonah Coleman to be in the mix here where they didn't have a run game once Dobbins got hurt late in the season. I think this number doesn't make sense. Based on what this team has accomplished the last two seasons with Bo Nix at quarterback, and he's coming off a fractured ankle. You have to be concerned about that. But he's going to play in the preseason. And by the way, that number is on the move this week already, with Nix likely to play with some of the starters for Denver this week in week two. You have a new offensive coordinator in Davis Webb. Sean Payton's going to be supervising the whole operation. Webb is said to be innovative. He's said to be really a breath of fresh air. There's a reason Sean Payton made sure that he kept Davis Webb, gave him this role, so that now you don't know what you're getting out of this offense. It's going to be Sean Payton's offense, but it's going to be through the eyes, the lens of Davis Webb. I think there's an element there that people aren't going to be ready for this season. Waddle, with nobody at quarterback last year, had 910 yards, 6 touchdowns, 14.2 yards per catch for him a season ago. But if he has competent quarterback play like in 2022, I mean, he was averaging 18.1 yards per reception. He was 24 years old. He's only going to be 28 this year. And then the run game, Coleman's going to become the guy, but now you have three diverse weapons. Dobbins, the vet, Harvey, the pass catcher, and Coleman, who I think eventually takes on that role of the early down guy. But I like the mix there. And then the defense. The defense is always going to be the backbone for Denver. Second in total defense last year, first in sacks by a mile. Opposing quarterbacks completed 57.8% of their passes against Denver. That was 6.1 yards per attempt, 18 touchdown passes. So this is a defense that makes it very difficult for quarterbacks to operate efficiently. Now you get another year of Riley Moss at corner, Benito and Allen piling up the sacks. If Cooper returns at all, that's icing on the cake. I don't know if he should based on what he did. But also, this is a team that maybe it's an opportunity to buy in late after the start to the year, because the schedule is tough to begin. At Kansas City, then Jacksonville and the Rams, at San Francisco, at the Chargers, then Seattle. Maybe you buy low if they go 1-4, 2-4 in that spot. But after that, I see plenty of wins being able to be ripped off here for the Denver Broncos. I think that they will beat Jacksonville in week two. I think they win at Carolina in week 9. I think they take care of the Raiders potentially in both meetings. Pittsburgh, sure it's on the road, but I'm not scared of the Steelers. Miami, the Jets, you get the benefit of playing Miami and the Jets this year with that AFC East crossover. I mean, based on everything I just said, that's 8 wins. You need 2 more out of the following. At Kansas City versus Kansas City. Against the Rams, at San Francisco, at the Chargers versus the Chargers, Seattle, Buffalo, New England on the road. I think you can get those 2 more. I think over 9.5 is the way to look. And again, I am not a Bo Nix guy, but the more I say that, the more I start to become one here. Cashing out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Appreciate you hanging out with us tonight. We do a little too high, all right. Looking at futures that are worth considering here. You tell me the 9.5 on Denver. Is that too high, or is that all right for you to look at betting this upcoming season? Now, let's go to the college ranks, where there's a team right now, 5.5 the win total, -190 to the over. You can get a plus price at over 6.5. And more importantly, you can get around 30-1 for the UCLA Bruins to make the college football playoff. Is there a reason we're not treating Bob Chesney like Kurt Cignetti? Because Bob Chesney literally followed in Kurt Cignetti's footsteps at JMU, did the same thing he did, didn't skip a beat. Things just, the song remained the same for Bob Chesney here. He takes over a UCLA team that showed some punch down the stretch a year ago. They only went 3-9, but Chesney has a track record, 21-6, 2 years at James Madison. 41 transfers come in, 18 on the defensive side. But when you think about him going to UCLA versus what Cignetti did at Indiana, I don't think the turnaround should be that crazy. UCLA's always been a sleeping giant. It's just no one's ever figured out how to consistently win there. I mean, Jim Mora Jr. had Brett Hundley, he had Jonathan Franklin, and he had Anthony Barr, and couldn't put out a consistent winner for the Bruins. But I think Bob Chesney will be different. I think he'll do that. In 2024 at James Madison, he went 9-4 after Kurt Cignetti took all of the best players with him to Bloomington. In 2025, he went 12-2 and made the college football playoff. Nico Amaliava comes in. After Deshaun Foster's firing last year, Nico Amaliava was a good quarterback for UCLA. They only went 3-5, but he completed almost 65% of his passes, 1,300 yards, 13 total touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. I think there's plenty of meat on the bone for Amaliava to even build on to what he did a year ago, now that he has real coaching and he has some interesting weapons coming in. 4-star Florida transfer Aiden Mizell. JMU's Landon Ellis, 624 yards, 5 touchdowns. San Jose State transfer Leland Smith, almost 700 yards and 3 touchdowns. A couple other big school guys from South Carolina, Michigan as well. JMU running back Wayne Knight joins the fold. He ran for almost 1,400 yards, 9 touchdowns. Also, Anthony Woods returns at the running back spot. And the O-line's been rebuilt. South Alabama guys, James Madison guys as well. And the defense. Colin Hitchler is the DC. He's been at Alabama, at Wisconsin. And they return their safety, Cole Martin. They return a couple of cornerbacks. But the portal, man, a couple of guys from JMU, including the Sunbelt Freshman of the Year, Sahir West, who had 7 sacks last year. Iowa safety, Tashawn James. Utah safety, Tao Johnson, who Chesney loves, based on what I'm reading in camp. Linebacker from Oklahoma. Bunch of guys from big schools that Bob Chesney has always been able to polish and turn into something here. I think they win San Diego State, Purdue, Michigan State, Nevada, Minnesota. That's 5 wins right there. They've got coin flip games at Cal, at Maryland, versus Wisconsin, versus Illinois, at Michigan, at USC at the end of the year. But is Lincoln Riley around for that one? What if their only loss is at Oregon? What if it's just at Oregon and at Michigan? Can UCLA somehow be that sneaky playoff team? I like the number better than Penn State, which everyone seems to love based on their schedule. Who should be the NL MVP? We'll break it down next on Cashing Out.
Welcome back to Cashing Out. You're on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Cashing Out rolls on from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Coming up in 15 minutes, the AP poll dropped in college football. I'll tell you what they got right, what they got wrong, and why Ryan Day sounds a little bit scared for the Buckeyes, who are your favorite in the betting market to win the national championship. But right now, got to talk a little baseball, some football as well, with our buddy Jeff Erickson. You can catch him here on the network, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Prop Points. Read him over at rotowire.com, at Jeff_Erickson on X. And I want to begin with what went down Monday night, because the two favorites for the National League MVP, Jeff, they had days. You had Ohtani with 2 home runs and 4 hits. You had 2 more home runs from PCA. One of them a walk-off win in extras against the White Sox. He's now 30-30 on the season. And I took a little PCA plus 110 as soon as I saw the ball leave the bat, just on instinct. It's one of those bets where, like, you're not even thinking. You're just like, you want quarterbacks to do in the NFL. I don't want you to think. I just want you to read and react. That was a situation where the ball left the bat. My read and react was PCA MVP. You can make the case either way, but what'd you think of the performance from both guys on Monday night?
You know, incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. They've made it a two-horse race, which is just amazing to me. Especially when you look at like a guy like CJ Abrams or James Woods, that would be different, but the seasons they had, and they're an afterthought in this whole discussion. It's really just these two players now. There's been so much negativity surrounding the Dodgers right now lately too, that, you know, it's interesting to see that, you know, PCA is actually the betting favorite now at DraftKings. It's 115 to 105, both minus numbers, but you're not going to get any value in that. I guess maybe there is value if you think there is, if you think PCA is going to run away with this, just because there might be some, you know, voter fatigue. We got that, you know, the Michael Jordan MVP voter fatigue is always the example people point to. You're tired of voting for the same guy every single year. The Cubs have had such an interesting narrative with PCA, you know, having the terrible start, the Cubs, you know, surging with him, surging as well. It's been a fun narrative there. And plus, he has the defensive advantage. If Shohei comes back and pitches in September and is brilliant, though, then we're rehashing this discussion all over again.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I'm leaning on the PCA side of things. I get both situations. I just think the defense matters. I think the moments matter. I think Ohtani off the Dodgers, what are they? PCA off the Dodgers, that's always my favorite game to play. I don't know if the voters actually play that, but that's usually the direction I look. Let's stay in the Central, Jeff, where the St. Louis Cardinals split a doubleheader on Monday with the Reds. They're three games out of a wild card. Can you explain to me how they're doing that when their pitching staff is Kyle Leahy, Matt Liberatore, and I miss a Mike McGreevy, who I don't know how every time I bet against him, he looks like Cy Young, and when I bet on him, he stinks. But how are the Cardinals doing this, and do they have a real chance to win the wild card?
You know, they've outperformed expectations from the word go all season long. Look at what Kyle Leahy's done. You know, he's transitioning from the bullpen to the rotation. And if you look at what he's done in the last 60 days, 1.52 ERA, 0.99 whip. Think about that. And it just shows he's got a 1.34 whip on the season. So he had a long way to go, but he was making a tough move. It's not easy to move from the bullpen to the rotation. He's done a good job with that. The Cardinals are an aceless team. That's the thing that's kind of amazing about it there. And why I'm not overly sanguine on their chances of winning the wild card, winning a wild card spot, but this has been a very successful season for the Cardinals. Their job, their mission was to identify which young players are going to build around, give all these young guys the playing time and see who floats, see who swims. You know, Alec Burleson's had a great season. Weatherholt's had a great season. Jordan Walker's emerged. Now we're seeing Joshua Baez get his chance. Ivan Herrera is a sneaky good player as well. This has been a really good season, especially on the hitting side of things here. Pitching, well, I think the Leahy experience has been good. Liberatore has shown his moments. Their bullpen's been better lately. They're not a great offensive team at home. In fact, one of the worst teams at home. That's been kind of bettable, actually, to go against the offensive trends with them whenever they're at home. But and St. Louis is kind of a moderate ballpark. It's not an extreme of any sort there, but they just haven't really produced that much. But still, it's all in all, it's been a successful season. And, you know, they moved on from Mozeliak, and, you know, it's the first year of a new regime. And I think they've had a lot of positive things happen for them, and they still got a loaded farm system.
Jeff Erickson is our guest, RotoWire senior editor, host of Prop Points here on VSiN, 1 p.m. Eastern time at Jeff_Erickson. You can find him on X. All right, my friend, talk me through this. You want me to do something I swore I wasn't going to do anymore. And it's not the thing where I lie to myself where I'm not going to eat carbs anymore. And then eventually I eat carbs again. The Seattle Mariners to make the playoffs are +240. I have bet the Seattle Mariners in a futures bet some way, shape, or form for basically four straight years. And this team constantly makes me look stupid. Why do you think this year could be different, at least to make the playoffs at +240?
It's the same script as last year, except a little bit more extreme. I mean, they had to rally last year, too. They've had to rally multiple years to make it. They had their best playoff run so far. The thing about the Mariners is, just look at how soft this bubble is for the AL wildcard. You know, they could still, and I have to make playoffs because they're only four games out of the AL West. And I'm not really convinced that Houston is all that good still. I'm not convinced that Texas is all that good still. So right now you have the Orioles, the Rangers, and the Tigers somehow, against all odds, are tied for the last wild card spot. They're three games under 500, respectively. Only the Tigers, among all the fringe AL wild card candidates, they are the only team that has a plus run differential. The Mariners have the second best run differential in this whole group, and they're only two games out of the wild card. So even though they have to leapfrog five teams, it's two games. And, you know, they got through Houston. They still have a series at Milwaukee, but they're going to have a better schedule in September. They're going to get to play a lot of their divisional foes, and you want them playing their divisional foes. That's what you want if you're the Mariners there. I still think they have the best rotation. They still have that Cade Anderson option.
True.
That I think, and I think they're going to employ it at some point in time. I think they'd be crazy not to. And then I don't know what happened to Cal Raleigh this season. I know he can't hit a fastball. He hit that wall scraper homer on Sunday night against the Astros. I'm not convinced that's a turnaround, but his collapse this season is a mystery to me to the extent that it is. I just think they have enough talent on this team that they still can make this run. And I'm not convinced any of these teams that are ahead of them are any good. So you're getting plus money, plus 240 just to make the playoffs over at FanDuel. If you want to win the AL West, it's plus 350. I think that's doable too.
No, I get the point. I'm considering going back for a little bit more in my position as Seattle preseason. I'm even thinking about doing something I swore I'd never do again. I think after last year, maybe it was the year before, is betting the Padres to make a run. But, baseball season.
They made their run.
Well, no.
The Padres have already made their run.
No,
they lost tonight. In fact, all the NL wildcard contenders lost tonight. It was pretty wild to see. But
they're 50-1 to win the World Series, Jeff. 50-1.
Well, that's a run. Joe Musgrove has to be key to that. They're going to get him back either this week or next. He's a different pitcher than all their other starting pitchers. They need someone like Musgrove to make a playoff run.
20-1, by the way, NL pennant. If someone else knocks the Dodgers off first, like with their bullpen, it's not crazy. But again, I swore off doing this. I'm not going to do it. Let's go to the NFL. The Colts with some issues at receiver. Alec Pierce doesn't sound like he's going to be ready for week one. Josh Downs dealing with some injuries as well. They went out and they signed Keenan Allen on Monday night. What's your perspective of what Allen brings to the table for Indy?
He brings target stealing skills. If you have Josh Downs or Alec Pierce or Tyler Warren, even adding Allen is not a friendly move for you. I know the Colts needed a third receiver. I get this. Especially because of the Pierce issue. The Pierce thing, I think, is pretty serious. And, you know, they signed him to, you know, a multi-year deal. So I kind of think that it's an issue there where he won't be ready for the start of the season. I think they want to be able to make sure they have him for the long haul, given how much they paid for him. It's best for them not to rush him back. But if you had Ladd McConkey last year, you know what Keenan Allen can do to other receivers on that, because you know he'll be that security blanket that the quarterback will be looking for. Plus, I don't know what version of Daniel Jones we're going to see still for this Colts team too. My vibes on the Colts were actually fairly negative going into this season. I still feel like I want to bet some unders on the Colts win totals. Allen doesn't move the needle as far as that goes. It gives them a healthy guy, which is fine. But it all starts with Jones and his mobility, and whether that receiving core is good enough to support that there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a 6-7 win team. I kind of like the under as well, although I do like Tyler Warren futures, just his season-long yardage prop. That's one direction I'm leaning as well. Before I let you go, you have one play on the baseball card for Tuesday. Cardinals and the Reds. What are you going to do here?
So I was talking up Kyle Leahy earlier there. We're going to go with this here. Kyle Leahy versus Andrew Abbott. I know the Cardinals struggled again to put a ton of runs up against the Reds today. They couldn't pull away from the Reds. So the Reds won in extras on that one there. So we got to the over because of the extras. But I like the under at 8.5 in this one for the most part going for this game as well. I think Leahy's going to shut down the Reds. Reds, dude, I'm a Reds fan. You know, I just watching them on a regular basis, I don't buy this offense a whole lot there. You know, Ellie De La Cruz hasn't had a long ball in a while. Sal Stewart is great, but after that, I don't feel compelled to watch him that much.
Well, we feel compelled to watch you every day. It's Prop Points, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on VSiN. He's Jeff Erickson. Check him out on X, at Jeff_Erickson. Appreciate the time as always, my friend.
Cashing out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on Cashing Out, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Thanks for hanging out with us, however you may be tuning in. SiriusXM channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Still to come on the program, Dave Ross, VSiN by the Books, explains what you need to be doing with the Dallas Cowboys in week one. Jonathan Von Tobel, questions surrounding the Green Bay Packers this year in the futures market. Plus, you will hear from Jeff Hafley later on in the show with his roster this season, where they are one of the favorites to have the fewest wins on the season. And I got to tell you, I feel like they're trying for it. I feel like that's the objective. That is the goal for the Miami Dolphins this year, former DC of the Green Bay Packers, as he sets the foundation for what the Dolphins are to become. I do believe the goal is to be as bad as possible to have your choice of quarterbacks in the upcoming 2027 NFL draft. Plus, we'll do a little three up, three down, previewing the baseball card for Monday. And right now, though, we have to talk a little college football because this Monday featured the AP Top 25 poll dropping. That's where we begin with the first of the week edition of the Campus Crawl. And the AP Top 25 comes out. Ohio State is your number one team in the country. I understand why the voters did that. They just kind of plug and play based on year and year in and out, and Ryan Day's back and Julian Sayin's back. So the Buckeyes have to be the number one team in the country. That makes no sense to me. I don't believe they are. I think that is a ridiculous statement just because Ohio State perennially is always a tough recruit, always has a ton of pieces coming in. I think the landscape has changed. And I think the idea of Ohio State just always reloading, always having guys to step into roles and hit the ground immediately and be dominant, not just good, dominant, I don't think that's necessarily true. Sayin, I think he's better than he gets credit for at times, but maybe a little bit overrated if you're someone who is an Ohio State fan. Jeremiah Smith is there, and he is a superstar, but there's questions around him. Brandon Innes' numbers for a guy who's been around for a while, they're not crazy. You also have Chris Henry Jr., who you're relying on a true freshman to just make an impact immediately. And oh, by the way, Brian Hartline, the guy that recruited all these big recruits, the guy who coached up all of these elite receivers that are spread throughout the National Football League, he's gone. He's the head coach of the USF Bulls. Are we sure that Arthur Smith knows how to maximize these guys? I just think there's a lot of assuming involved. And when you look at the defense specifically, Arvell Reese, Caleb Downs, Sonny Styles. That's just three guys who went in the first round. You also had a D lineman get drafted that's going to make an impact in the NFL right away. 2 years ago, it was the most expensive team in college football. And while they're still spending money, there's not as many known commodities as there's been in years past. I do not believe, if these polls are based on what we know about teams, Ohio State shouldn't be number one in my eyes. I think it's Oregon. Now, we're splitting hairs, one versus two. I understand that. But Ohio State's schedule on top of that, I have a lot of questions about that. And they have Texas in week two, and then they go to Iowa. They go to Indiana. They go to USC. They host Oregon. Michigan to finish it out with a real coach this time around. Look, I think they're making the playoff, but the reality is I don't think the Buckeyes are some team like we project them to be because of the jersey, because of the logo, because of the history with them. And in fact, Steve Sarkisian, the head coach of the Texas Longhorns, who will see them in week two, had this to say about this latest AP Top 25 poll.
No. And that's no disrespect to anybody here who votes, okay? And anybody out there who votes, quite frankly. It just, you know, the era of college football has changed, you know? And I'm not naive to think that human nature is human nature, and I would imagine to some degree the CFP, when it starts coming down to it, I'm sure looks at the polls as one of the barometers to say, you know, what does the media think of the teams that are playing right now? But that's a piece of it. You know, years ago, that was the determining factor. There was two polls. There was a coaches poll, the AP poll, and that determined the national champion. Different today. I love the polls for this. I love the polls for college football, for the fans, for the excitement, for the marquee matchups, for all those things. I love the polls for all that. But the polls internally, they just don't matter.
He is right. They do not matter. These games will be played out. We will have things situated for the college football playoff. And I think this is a sign of how out of touch the media is, because they have their agenda coming in. I have my agenda. I'll be flat out. Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm being super objective here, but this would be my top 10 if I was putting out my top 10 list right now. I think Oregon, with what they have back at quarterback and on defense, and a team that's building year after year, that'd be my number one team in the country. There are known commodities there that I trust and believe in. Number two, I think Steve Sarkisian stinks. But I think his roster is so good, Texas would be my number two team in the country. That is with not believing in Steve Sarkisian as a coach. I think the talent is so good on this roster, it could potentially overcome that. I have Notre Dame at three. CJ Carr's back, a team with a chip on their shoulder. They're always strong on the O-line. They always pound the football on the ground. They have weapons returning at receiver. The defense is absolutely loaded in that secondary. Notre Dame is number three. I have Miami at number four. Mensa in. Offense is going to be turned all the way up in Coral Gables. And the defense might take a step back with what they lost a year ago, but I still think Miami's going to be awesome. Then I have Indiana at five. Indiana benefit a lot from some of the rules now with these courts, with guys getting extra years of eligibility. I have all those teams ahead of Ohio State. I may look stupid at the end of this year. I'm fine saying that, but I think you are all, including the bookmakers, overrating the Ohio State Buckeyes this season. Speaking of Ohio State, feels like Ryan Day might be scared because they're moving senior day from the end of the season against Michigan to week one against Ball State. Hold on. Why is that, Ryan? You don't want the spotlight at the end of the year. You're nervous things maybe won't be going well at that point in the season when the Wolverines come to Columbus. Here's what Ryan Day said about moving senior day to week one, something that I don't think anyone's ever done in college football.
When we look at all the things that go on that weekend, the way things have changed, there's some things that we thought about. And I think the first thing was we want to keep that game, much of that game, the focus on the game. And the more distractions we have, there's already enough distractions during that week. And so this was just one more thing that we felt like we could move. Then when we started to look at just, you know, the way that college football is now, you know, recognizing seniors, you know, someone like Brandon Ennis is a little different than Earl Little. And so you know, we thought about maybe moving it up a week. And then we said, well, why don't we just recognize all the seniors at the beginning of the year, let them know how much we appreciate everything they've done, and then kind of, you know, move on with the season. And sort of a different way to look at it.
Sure, Ryan. You're a 13.5-point favorite in the game of the year line against Michigan, who now has Kyle Whittingham as the head coach, another year of Bryce Underwood, really creative offensive mind calling the plays. Sure, you're going to move it to week one because you want to focus on Michigan. No, that sounds like you're scared. You don't want the spotlight on your team. I think that's a weird move. And if I'm Ohio State, I would have to like, of course we want senior day to be when we play Michigan. We don't think that they're a threat. We're going to celebrate. We're going to do our thing, and we're going to move on to the college football playoff. They're still a playoff team. I'm not acting like they're not going to make the playoffs. I just don't think they're as like this team with armor that can't be knocked down, like they're being treated in the betting market. Finally, a team that used to be Ohio State that is not in my top 10 is the Alabama Crimson Tide. They have a battle at quarterback. Their OC, Ryan Grubb, updated us on where we stand between Keelan Russell and Austin Mack in Tuscaloosa.
We're close. I mean, we're getting close to game week. So I would say, you know, by next week, we'll have to make that call. You know, I'd say it like this. I said in the meeting room the other day, I think we hit a lull as it was kind of like the look around phase, like what's going on right now. And I think they got through that now. They broke through that with the scrimmage. And I feel like, you know, always coach quarterbacks to be playing with blinders on, just focus on you, the things you need to improve. And I think we lost sight of that a little bit for a few practices, and been really, really impressed, you know, especially today on some move the ball situations where both guys were able to just hone in on the things they need to do better and didn't get stuck when it didn't go perfect, and were able to keep us moving. So we're getting there.
The longer this thing goes on, it just feels like it's going to be Keelan Russell in this situation. Win total for Alabama is 8.5. I know a lot of people like Phil Steele are bullish on a bounce back for the boys in T-Town. I don't hate looking at it from that contrarian point of view. I think Kalen DeBoer is an awesome coach. I just question if the SEC is the right fit for what he wants to do. Keelan Russell is the upside play, and he played better in the spring game. He's a five-star. He's more mobile, former Elite 11 MVP. Well, Austin Mack, he transferred from Washington with DeBoer when he took the job here. He's bigger, has a bigger arm, feels like the safer move. I don't know if Kalen DeBoer can play it safe. He's 20-8 right now. I will point out Nick Saban was 19-8 after 2 years. DeBoer went 25-3 at Washington. There's only six players left from the Saban era. They lost a lot to the NFL last season and in the portal. They tried to use the portal to replenish the system with a lot of high talent guys, but they got bullied by Georgia and Indiana on the line of scrimmage last year. Unless that's fortified, I don't think it matters who plays quarterback, but the longer it goes on, I think it's Keelan Russell because it was Austin Mack's job to win. He hasn't taken it. I think they go with the upside play in Keelan Russell. and I lean under 8.5 on the tie.